Hello there, friends. Welcome back to a brand new edition of the pod. We've got a great one lined up for all of you. We'll talk a little bit about Wednesday night's UFC fight night event. We'll talk to Jorge Masvidal, and we will talk to Rose Namajunas as well. So stay tuned for all of that. But first, a reminder that season 8 of 30 for 30 returns with heavy medals inside the Caroli Gymnastics Empire. It is a groundbreaking 7-part podcast series that takes listeners on a deep dive into the lives and influence of Bella Caroli and Marta Caroli, the most successful and controversial coaches in USA gymnastics history. Subscribe now to the 30 for 30 feed on Apple Podcasts. The whole season is now available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, listener discretion is advised. Back in your life on this Thursday, July 16th, 2020. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to another edition of the pod. As always, we are presented by Modelo. Modelo Especial. Root for those with a fighting spirit. So we are doing this very late night on Thursday morning following the UFC fight night in Abu Dhabi. If I'm talking a little lower than usual, it's because my family is sleeping right next door to me and I don't want to wake them up because that would not be good for me. But in any event, we just wrapped up a pretty entertaining event on paper. The main event was won by Calvin Kattar. He defeated Dan Ige via unanimous decision, 4-1. I scored it the exact same. Solid performance out of Kattar. He said afterwards that he wanted to fight the champ, Volkanovski, next. I don't think that's going to happen, but we do have some big featherweight fights coming up involving potentially Zabit Magomedsharipov and Yair Rodriguez, Korean Zombie versus Brian Ortega. None of those fights officially announced just yet. And of course, there's still Max Holloway out there. He's ranked 6th. I suspect he probably gets the winner of those two fights who doesn't get to fight for the belt. Like if Zombie wins, I suspect he'll fight Volkanovski because they have a feud. So maybe he gets the winner of the other fight. If Zabit wins that fight, that might be weird because he lost to Zabit. In any event, I still feel like he's in the mix. It was a big win for him, big showcase fight. So good on Calvin Kattar for getting that victory and remaining in the mix at 145. Tim Elliott beat Ryan Benoit, aka Benoit. I scored it for Ryan, 29-28. That was a weird one, but a fun fight nonetheless, and a bit of an appetizer, if you will, for this weekend where we get Davison Figueiredo versus Joseph Benavidez for the flyweight title. So the flyweights are doing good things. It was one of the more entertaining fights on the card, so hopefully we're not getting rid of those guys anytime soon. Jimmy Rivera with a nice hard-fought win over Cody Stamann took the fight on 8 days' notice, so that was impressive. Talia Santos, also impressive against Molly McCann, thoroughly dominated the Liverpudlian. So that was a great win for Talia Santos, who now improved to 16-1. What about Munir Lazaz, who defeated Abdul Razak Al-Hassan? Fight started really poorly for Lazaz, and he turned things around. That guy's got a chin. Holy smokes. What a great performance in his debut. He improved to 10-1. And how about Khamzat Chimaev of Sweden? Probably the most impressive prospect on the card, and a card filled with tons of impressive prospects, defeating John Phillips. That was as one-sided as it gets. The first UFC debutant to score 100 or more total strikes in the first round of their debut. So very impressive stuff from him, very one-sided stuff. And I think that he will be a player. Remember that name, Khamzat Chimaev is going to be a player in this sport. Another guy who I think is going to be a player is the miracle, Leron Murphy. He defeated Ricardo Ramos. He was shot in the neck 6 years ago. Bullet came out of his mouth. He spit it out, survived that. They call him the miracle. 6 months later, gets his life back on track. Here he is in the UFC, picking up his first win, had a split decision draw in his last fight. But Murphy's a name to know out of the UK, so remember him. And we had Jared Gordon with a nice victory with Paul Felder in his corner over Chris Fishgold. And on it went. Jack Shore with a nice win as well. So those are some of the notables. I pretty much went through all the notables right there. But in any event, it was a good card. And of course, now we turn our attention to Figueiredo Benavidez on Saturday. That'll be the third of 4 events on Fight Island. And then we'll wrap it up next weekend with Whitaker versus Till. For now, though, I spoke to Jorge Masvidal recently, who is still very much in the news. He had that huge weekend last week. Unfortunately, he fell short against Kamaru Usman. You know the story by now. Here's my conversation with Jorge Masvidal in his first interview since the loss on Saturday to Usman. Enjoy. Here we are, what, 2.5 days removed from the fight? Obviously, you were upset afterwards. You handled it very well. You faced the music. You went to the press conference. But how is it sitting with you now? How do you feel about the fight 2.5 days later?
I got the same exact fire that was burning then. I just felt like I wanted to run sprints and just fucking like blow out my lungs. Oh, my God, Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay, good. I've been being sensitive this whole time. I still got that. I woke up yesterday. I wanted to work out, so I did. I went for a nice little bike ride, played some spike ball afterwards, so I got tired. And then I went to the gym today. I got a good weightlifting session in. I got a lot of jet fuel in me, and the only way I deal with this is by working out or eating. I don't want to get fat and stuff again, so I'm going to go work out a lot and just release my demons that way, you know?
When you say the jet fuel and the demon stuff, is that frustration? Like, do you feel like you need to get that out because you're mad?
It's a combo of things. It's you know, if I would have done this, if I would have done that, if, you know, it's a lot of things. And anyways, ultimately, just to be in better shape, you know, because a big factor on Saturday was the gas tank, you know. So I definitely want to improve on that on all aspects of it, you know.
So if I can, I'd love to go to before the fight. You know, you said all the right things. You know, when we spoke on that Sunday night, right, you told us 192 and a lot was made of the 192, but you've never missed weight before. And people who follow MMA didn't really raise too many eyebrows because we're used to that sort of thing. But internally, were you worried about the weight because of the travel and the quarantine and all that stuff? Were you putting on a strong face, but internally were questioning it a little bit?
I hadn't cut that amount of weight since I was at 155 pounds. So I was definitely it's going to suck, but I know I could do it because I've done it, you know? And the older you get, the tougher, the harder weight cut you go through, you know? So I definitely knew it was going to be tough. But I knew what I signed up for, man. I knew what I signed up for. And I had been there, done that at 155 pounds. It was part of the program. I always to cut a large amount of water at that weight. At 173, 174 pounds of 5% body fat, once I get down to that low already. So the rest was water to get down to 156. So I used to have tough cuts there. So I was well prepared to make a tough cut, and it was tough, you know. But I got the job done, so I'm proud. That's something. When I signed on the contract, I like to make weight. It feels like cheating, you know. I felt like, man, I got 3 pounds to go. Am I going to break here and not compete for a world title and be a punk? I signed on the dotted line, whether it was 6 days, 6 hours, 6 months. When you sign on the dotted line, your first obligation to yourself and to your opponent is to make weight, you know.
And so how close were you to not making? Like, how difficult was it? You said it was rough on Friday at the the scrum, yeah, after the weigh-in.
It was rough. But let me say something from top to bottom, from me and Usman, to all the way on the preliminaries, every guy, girl, everybody that fought on that card, bravo, applause to them. Not a lot of people know. It was rough. You know, we were quarantined in Vegas, quarantined in Abu Dhabi since you got there, in hotel rooms, and then fights. Some of these guys and girls were fighting at 4 or 5 a.m. So they had to fly to Abu Dhabi, get adjusted with the time, and then get adjusted to be at their most alert that they've ever been at, like 4 a.m. So hats off to a lot of these competitors, especially the young ones, because I've done this for a while, not to brag, but I've competed in Japan 5 times, South Korea. I've done the overseas. A lot of these competitors might have been like their first time fighting overseas, and they did really well. And I think they handled it amazing. And the card was just stacked from top to bottom. The fights were good. Everybody got their money's worth, I feel.
Were you ever worried that you wouldn't make weight?
I was hurting, but I was never worried, man. I'm a dog. Once I sign that dotted line, I'm going to make the weight. You know, that I got a reputation to keep, you know?
Mm-hmm. How much do you think, I don't know, maybe you weighed yourself, I don't know, but how much do you think you weighed come Saturday night, or technically Sunday morning over there?
I got on the scale, I was 184 pounds. So I put back on about 14, 15 pounds.
Okay. And come fight time, come, you know, the time that you were in the locker room, were you feeling okay? Or did you still, I mean, the weight cut was obviously draining. Did you feel like you were back to yourself, or were you still hurting a little bit?
I let the world draw the conclusions when we have a rematch, you know. It's all there on papers, and I'm a numbers guy. I'd rather go off numbers and stuff. It's all there on papers, you know, what my body looked like in other fights and in this fight. It's all there, and it's all for the people to say and judge. I feel like I don't have to say it, you know, but obviously I wasn't at my best. I wasn't at a specific fight training. When I got the call 6 days away, I was not in the gym. I was more in the general conditioning phase where I was running, I was lifting weights, I was doing different things. I wasn't in the mat as much. I was in the mat 3-4 times a week, but my priority was to get in relatively better shape. So more long distance running, things like that. So I wasn't a fight specific training for that until we got the call, and then we started training specifically for the fight. And I did the best that I could, you know. So I don't wanna make excuses. I'm gonna take nothing from Usman, because even me on 6-day notice, fighting the world champ, I am a dangerous animal. I'm a effing tiger at all times. And I think you saw that, you know. It was a battle, it was a fight for real estate, and he won on the real estate side more often than not. He was able to take me to his side of the world and keep me there. So I don't wanna take nothing from him, but we'll leave it up to the rematch. I'll let my actions speak louder than my words, you know. I don't wanna take nothing from him. Sure. And I don't wanna I'm not the type of guy, I'm not gonna sit here and make excuses either. I signed that dotted line. I know what I got myself into. I knew I had 20 hours of traveling that way. I knew it was everything that I had to do. So next question.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, by the way, I'm not trying to set you up to make excuses. I'm trying to paint the picture.
I know what you're doing, man. I know what you're doing.
Well, I'm just curious, in the process and even come fight night, was there any part of you that ever thought like, man, we heard about this fight Super Bowl, right? Like when Dana was doing media, July 11th, we're going to have this. We're talking 5-6 months ago. And I know you were training a little bit. Then you took your foot off the gas once they went to Burns. Were you ever thinking, if we just would have agreed to this deal from the beginning, I could have had a proper training camp and none of this would have been an issue? Like, did you find yourself thinking about that at all?
That definitely. That is, I was sitting in the sauna and stuff. If these motherfuckers would have just came to their senses from the start, you know. And you were talking about the pay-per-view numbers and stuff. If I would have took the original deal, this pay-per-view deal would have not been highly beneficial for me, the way they were structuring. It just wasn't, you know. So I had to take a gamble on myself, and I wanted to make sure that the gamble was fine. Don't give me that much guarantee money, but I'm going to get paid on the pay-per-view side. If I bring in numbers, I want to be compensated for it, you know. And they wouldn't strike that deal with me the first time. We struck it this time, 6 days away. And we were able to strike the deal. A lot of insane factors, right? Like Corona happened, so the guy gets dismissed 6 days away. But all these crazy things had to happen to get a deal that I felt comfortable with. You know?
When we spoke on the Sunday before the fight, and I asked you about agreeing to the deal, and you're like, yeah, you know how it goes. You got to sign a 10-fight deal and all that stuff. However, when I spoke to your co-manager, Malki Kawa, a couple of days later, he was like, no, he just signed like a 1-fight addendum. It's not a long-term deal that he signed. Can you clear that up for us?
We did not sign a long-term deal, yeah, I'm being told. It was for this fight, but not my other contract is still in place, I think. So this is a one-time offer. Yeah, one-time off.
That's probably better for you, right?
Hell yeah, it is.
Did you not know that?
I didn't even know that. I wasn't trying to worry about it. At that moment already, I was like, am I getting taken care of this runner here right now? Can I bet on myself? Can I be brought to the table, not giving scraps? Yes. Okay, good. The rest of the stuff I wasn't trying too much to think about, because I was already thinking what I have to do to cut the weight, what's going to be the strategy, how should I disperse my energy, you know, things like that. So my mind was already in another place.
Last thing pre-fight related, did the time difference mess you up at all? The fact that you were fighting at around 7, 8 a.m. over there, were you successful in your effort to stay on Miami time, or did you feel a little bit off? And again, not trying to set you up, I'm just curious about the experience, because it's very rare for fighters to fight in the morning like that.
And I think that's a great question. Like I said earlier, hats off to everybody. So I fought in Japan 5 times, South Korea, Russia, England, you know, so I have a lot of overseas experience, and I know what that entails, you know. I know what I got to do to get ready. Having to fight to adjust to the time period and then have your most ready at 8 a.m, you also have to adjust to that. So I have to be sleeping maybe at a different time, you know, waking up in the day, getting a little workout, then going back to sleep so I can wake up at night, like around 1-2 a.m, and then stay till like 9 a.m. wide awake, and at like 8 a.m. be my most awake. So we had to play with those numbers and stuff, but everybody on the card had to do that. So I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying what everybody went through, hats off. Because I don't think a lot of people back home know, because everybody had to get adjusted within days. So it's really like a testament to the spirit of the MMA fighter. We're dogs. We're going to go out there and put on the show no matter what. That's where we're one of the fastest growing sports in the world. We're just unstoppable. I think a lot of regular human beings would not have wanted any part of the madness that took place. Just a big shout out to all my brothers and sisters that were on the card, because they gave it their all. And it wasn't easy, man.
Was a part of the game plan to come out really strong in the first? Were you worried about the cardio affecting you? So almost trying to swing for the fences in the first round to end this early? Because it looked like you were definitely very aggressive early on in the fight.
I definitely knew that. I'll put it like this in terms that could be understood better. I couldn't run the mile at my best pace, let's say, right? So I couldn't do my regular timeouts, but I could run sprints hard and then take a break, you know, like a 400-yard sprint, an 800-yard sprint, and then I would have to catch my breath and then do it again. That was the type of shape that I was more in. So in those spots, I was trying to obviously land the finishing blow. So my blows were coming hard every time I was, unless I was setting something up, I was obviously trying to KO him and then recharge and then try to KO him again and things like that, you know. As to where Usman was ready to run them out. He was able to run them out and keep that pace continuously and keep me off my game and impose his will and take it to his side of the real estate, you know.
Did you think you won the first round?
I was just the whole time I was thinking every time, even before the first round, after the first round, I need a KO. That's the only way I'm going to win. Because even if I'm winning, I might not have the greatest guys in the fourth and fifth round. So I'm just trying to at all times KO, you know.
Okay, when did you start to feel like you were losing a little bit of steam?
Second round, like 2 minutes into it, my legs were like, boom, you know. It was costing me a lot to move the legs a little bit. But it's a fight game, man. I know what I signed up for. It was still, believe it or not, at my most tired, having a man that's a world champion trying to come take my head off, it was still a good time. And I was still had to remind myself, wow, this is what I love to do, and I'm still getting to do it, you know. I'd be grateful. I think this will be one of the coolest stories that I could ever have, maybe, possibly, you know, just the outside factors of the 6-day notice or whatever. This whole corona pandemic crap that's going on that we're living through, I got to not only earn a living through this period, but go through some crazy stuff, man. I was stopping in places in the world, and it's a very hostile time, very crazy, weird times that we're living through. So that I got to live through the experience, compete for a world title under these circumstances, I'm just so thankful, man. It was quite the joy.
We saw a couple of headbutts. The cut up here, I think that's your right eye. Yeah, that one. Is that from the headbutt? And if so,
that was the first one that they got me, and I got another one right here in the chin. I got some more stitches here. I don't know if this one was from my elbow or punch. It might have been.
How many stitches total?
I think 11.
Okay.
Five.
And you mentioned the legs. Is that something that you've felt in the past when you were fighting at 155, like the legs kind of going out on you very early in a fight? And if so, like mentally, what does that do to you?
At 55, it just, I didn't have pop. And you could tell once I crossed over to the UFC, I didn't have that stopping power no more. I heard a couple guys, but I didn't have that stopping power. I was more like a second, third base hitter, where once I came back up to 70 and I was able to put in a little bit of sides and keep that explosiveness, I'm able to catch guys. And at 55 in training, I would feel good, you know, 4 weeks before the fight. But once it was those last 3 weeks where I was just cutting a lot of weight and not getting a lot of carbs, the power would lose. So that's one decision why I decided to come up from 55 to 70, just to feel closer to how I felt in sparring, you know.
A lot of people online were criticizing him for the foot stomps. Did those affect you at all?
That's no. Nice. I have a lot of conditioning. I kick heavy bags all the time. Hit the pads all the time, you know. So fighter to fighter, we know that doesn't do anything. You're not gonna. I went bike riding yesterday, lifted weights today. That's not gonna stop me from any capacity, you know.
Did he do anything that surprised you or impressed you?
His strength, the way that he could just like, you know, some guys are bam explosive, right? And some guys are this keep that strength the whole time, you know. And he had a good grip strength. And he had a good squeeze right here where he felt really strong, and then he was able to keep it. Obviously, he faded, he started to drop, but he was able to keep it. He was able to keep a good percentage of his strength. A lot of guys start really strong, and as every round goes, it gradually gets weaker. He was able to sustain that strength, you know.
After the fight, you guys embraced and you shared some words, and it seemed like there was love there. Why did you feel the need to do that?
I didn't feel the need to do it. You know, he looked at me, I said something, he responded well, I responded well, and that's it. It just happened. It wasn't planned. I wasn't going into the fight or even during the fight thinking of any of that, you know, it just happened. We both shared an experience here, you know. I said some things, he said some things, that's it, you know.
Do you feel like the beef is over? Like, is there no more bad blood? Because you guys both said it was personal going into the fight. Do you feel like that's gone now?
No, I always said it was business. I never said it was personal, but he did cross the line. Yeah, I still believe he crossed the line. But everything to me is just business in this sport, man. Ain't nothing personal. It's not personal with Leon. It's not personal ever with Usman. I said it, it's never personal. It's always business, you know? And that's the honest truth, man. I mean, I'm not taking this stuff into the grave, you know?
Right. Do you feel like with him it's over?
No, it's just begun. You know, as far as competitiveness goes, you know, as a person, I respect everybody that gets in that cage. Can't nobody tell me how hard of a life it is more than me. So everybody that gets in the cage, man, woman, child, anything, whoever they are, I respect them. I know what they go through to earn these paychecks. So of course I have respect for him and most of the competitors. 99.9% of them I have respect for, you know.
I saw you briefly talk to Dana in the cage. What did you say to him, or what did he say to you?
We said some things. You know, we'll be having a FaceTime with Dana hopefully soon. Very soon we're going to sit down with him, have some words, have a little meeting, a little talking back and forth, see where they're at, you know. He said some good things to me, and let's see. I just want to sit down and talk with him a little bit, you know, pick his brain, see where we're at.
He said earlier today he acknowledged that, you know, you are a pay-per-view star. I don't know if you heard those comments, but do you feel like he believes in you now? Do you feel like he wants to be in business with you and promote you and give you what you think you deserve? Like, are you confident of this?
We're going to sit down and talk with him and we'll know. You know, I'm, like I always say, I'm a numbers guy. I'm actually speak louder than words. We'll sit down and talk with him and we'll see where they're at and go from there.
Did you have any conversations with him outside of that cage conversation throughout the week in Abu Dhabi?
No, I don't talk to anybody.
Right. I'm sure you may have seen there are reports about the pay-per-view. I don't know what's true, what's not, but Dana acknowledged that it did very, very well. When you see this, what do you think? Obviously, you probably always thought that you were a draw and deserved a lot of money and you wanted to bet on yourself. So that would suggest that you thought the pay-per-view would do well. But when you see this, is it like sort of like, hey, I told you so? What goes on when you see these reports?
I initially didn't take the fight because I wanted to bet on myself. The structure of it wasn't quite right. You know, it wasn't how we wanted it, how a betting man that was betting on himself would get rewarded. So that was the initial no's, you know. So when they came back around, it was different. Some could say I had leverage, you know, I guess. And we were able to strike a deal that was fairer to both sides, I feel. A little bit more fair to them, possibly, than me, you know. But it was definitely a much better deal. And now under this, this structure of pay-per-view, I feel well, you know. If everything comes back as the reports are saying, I feel we did really well. Your boy's going to be compensated, you know, not because I asked for more guaranteed money, nothing, but just the way that we set up the structure, I felt a lot more comfortable with.
If the pay-per-view is in that ballpark, how much do you walk away with? Do you mind me asking?
What is that guy? What's his name? Okay, Darnell. How am I forgetting his last name from Dave Chappelle show? Darnell Rollins, is it? I don't want to say it wrong, and then he murders me. You know, the guy from Dave Chappelle said, I'm rich, bitch! That's all I could say. That guy. I wish I had him right next to me and I could tell him to say it, man. You know?
But you don't want to talk specifics?
No, because we don't even have, we're all in theories right now, right? So it takes, you know, 90 days for those pay-per-view numbers to get back. Okay. I'm going to wait until they come back and then we can have this discussion again, you know?
Okay.
I'm a numbers guy, man. Like, you know, concrete, solid things.
Fair to say, though, the biggest payday of your career?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, buddy. No matter what, yeah. Yeah.
When you sit down,
I want 6 day notice, Ariel. You know, I'm also a businessman. I had to be worth my while.
Sure.
I had to be worth my while. You know, that 20 pound weight cut had to be worth my while. I felt like I had to get compensated for that. You know.
You know, I talked about sort of lamenting the fact, oh, if this would have been done earlier, I wouldn't have gone through the trouble of cutting the weight, this much weight, etc. But do you believe that because of the short notice situation, because of the whole crazy week, that you are now even a bigger star despite losing? It almost feels like the legend has grown even more and people love you even more and are just happy you stepped up and fought for 25 minutes, all this stuff. Have you noticed that you are even more beloved than you were going into this fight?
Well, if I was going off the fan engagement, the amount of letters that we've been trying to respond back to, I would say, wow. Goodness, I inspired a lot, you know. I inspired a lot of individuals. I can say that I got some very touching letters and we're trying to respond back to them. It's crazy, man. I, you know, when you start the journey, you start fighting. Especially me, I was thinking about providing for me and my family. Never would I think that I could influence so many people in a positive way. Crazy. Just doing what I love to do, compete, train for it, compete, you know, and stay true to my sport and to myself. I never thought I could reach so many and influence so many in a positive way, which is something that till this moment right now, it brings a lot of pride and joy to keep pushing, to keep doing things, you know. I was at the gym today, and it was a photo shoot, you know, and a lot of these kids came up to me. They were young, the baseball team, and they were like, man, I'm just so inspired, you know, and I'm like, hell yeah, you just got to get it, man. Just get after it, you know, chase your dreams with full dedication. I gave some speeches out without even knowing. I had like 20 kids listening. I'm giving speeches, you know, because they're just asking me about my journey. And I'm like, all right, well, I'll tell you, you know. So I never thought I could inspire so many in a positive way. And that's just a blessing from God.
Why do you think people have connected to you so much, especially now? Because, I mean, if these numbers are correct, Jorge, there's a strong case to be made that you're the number two biggest pay-per-view draw in the sport. And this is year 17 of your career. It's unlike anything we've ever seen, let alone MMA, but sports period. Like usually when you're in year 17, you don't become a megastar. You're usually at the end of the career, you're hanging on, et cetera. Why do you think you have now developed this connection, this intense connection with the public to where they love you so much? Why do you think?
I'm a dog. You know, a lot of people are dogs. You know, a lot of us, especially the ones that might have failed. They open up a business and they failed, or, you know, they didn't pass that test the first time. They failed and they said, you know what? I don't give a F. I'm going to do it again. I'm going to, you know, read more books and pass the test, or I'm going to put in more hours and get that promotion. And that's what I get a lot, at least what I could tell you. When people come up to me and they're in a more emotional state, not just so much a picture, and we're like exchanging maybe like a story or something touching, that they're telling me that I've done for them in their life. And what they're relating back to me is a lot of times that I get the feedback is the dog qualities. There's not a fight you can find that I quit. Now, 6 day notice, I'm not quitting no matter what happens. And I think people really like that characteristic, you know, that I'm a dog, win or lose. I'm gonna learn from my mistakes. I'm gonna get better, and I'm gonna give you everything I got again. I'm gonna hit the reset button. I'm gonna forget about Saturday. Because if we were to fight this Saturday, I would forget about all those things. Just take the positive things that I could use to fight, and I'd go back at it again with everything I got, you know. And I think that's possibly the favorite characteristic I think I have that people relate. A lot of people have that characteristic, you know, or want to develop it.
Okay, just a couple more things if I can. You sit down with Dana and he says, all right, Jorge, who do you want next? What do you want to do? What's the answer?
It'd be Usman, obviously. It's a no-brainer. Usman, could they offer me bigger names and pay me more money? Yes, for a fact. But if it's up to me, Usman, you know, for me stepping up in 6 day notice, and nobody else will, because a lot of people are saying that they would, but who else did it? Tell me, who else really actually asked Dana? Who else was actually like, hey, Masvidal doesn't do it, I'm gonna do it. I'm right here. I'm ready to go. Let's do it. You know, so you know, if it's up to me, yeah, of course, Usman right away. And I don't care if they could offer me a bigger fight or not. I would like to fight Usman.
So Usman over Diaz 2, McGregor. Mm-hmm. Anyone like that?
You can tell me that McGregor right now would make XYZ dollars, the biggest pay-per-view event in history, right? And I'm going to get paid forever. I feel I got compensated well enough now that I keep making the right decisions I've been doing, and this money is forever money. So it's not about money, you know? It's about I want that damn belt, and I'm stubborn, and I know I'm better than Usman, and I want to prove it. I'm gonna fight again. I'm not going to take none from him. He won the first one. Let's do it again. Let's do it again, and that's it, you know. And after that, then we could start whatever comes next after that. But Usman's the thing that I want the most. The immediate rematch is Usman for me, you know.
Do you think the UFC will be on board with that?
I don't know. We'll talk to them. I'm sure Usman would be on board because this is the most money he's made, you know. His other pay-per-view, and this is just talking numbers, facts. So this is not like to take a shot at him or not, but this is the actual truth. His actual last UFC had similar guys that were on the card now, Max Holloway, Volkanovski, things like that, and same similar formula. I wasn't added to that formula, and that card didn't do that well. I think it did under 300,000, something like that. Now, this card does this well. I'm not trying to knock nobody on the card or nothing, you know? So there has to be some recipe that was different from that other card. And if he has a brain, he knows probably some of that credit is due to me. So if he wants to make that big boy money again, come on, you got to run it back. Let's go. So on business, it makes sense, you know. So let's see. I don't know what their management is thinking or what he's thinking, you know, but obviously it's what I want to do.
As you've probably seen talk of Burns now getting the shot because he was supposed to get the shot, what would you say to someone like him who says, hey, you know, the only reason why you got it now is because I tested positive, so it should be me versus Kamaru next.
I'm not going to be addressing anybody. I care less. Everybody's going to address me and say things, you know. Before the Usman fight, when I didn't take it, remember the thing was that I was scared of him. This guy would crush me immortally. And I take the fight in 6 day notice. Obviously, I'm not scared of no man. I'm not I'm not going to sit here and diss people either. Is Gilbert good? Yeah. Is Leon good? Yeah. Those guys are good, man. But I'm going to vote for myself. I'm going to put the money on me. I want to fight. I want to fight Usman next. And they could sit here and be like, well, you only got, like you were saying, because of Corona and this and that. Well, then I could just sit there and go, well, you only got to fight because I didn't want those numbers. You were willing to take less, and so therefore you got less. You know? Wasn't meant to be, though. God didn't want it like that.
Do you want to fight again this year?
Yeah, as long as it's Usman, yeah.
Do you have a scheduled meeting with Dana?
No, we just made it official, me and you. Somebody will get back to Dana. He's going to be like, oh, man. I dodged my ass for all night. What's up, meeting, man? Don't I got that golf tournament or something? Yeah, he's probably going to go missing now. I should have just, you know, FaceTimed him first. Give him no chance to breathe.
But it is important to sit down face-to-face with him and talk and clear the air, maybe.
Well, they wanted to do something like that originally before this happened, right? Mm-hmm. So I think Hunter, you know, wondered it was either going to come here or they were going to take me to Vegas after the event, you know? And then all of a sudden, I get the call, right? For the fight fell off and this and that. But we were going to have a meeting. We were going to talk again and have a face-to-face and share our side of the story, where we're coming from, and then we're going to, you know, tell me their side of the story.
You tweeted something about, hey, Reebok is done. Before we knew, we should talk about this. Well, they announced it right before your fight that it's Venom. Like, are you going to keep talking about these things that don't only affect you, but affect everyone else now that you still got paid?
And I think a bulk of the fighters, except the UFC White Knights, will be on board with me, right? Like, you know, what's going on? I want to know what these numbers are. I want to, does it benefit us? When do we start getting a little bit like, hey, hell yeah, you know, I don't like hearing that some top 10 guy, no matter what weight class he is, whether I like the person or not, is having to work a job. I don't want to hear that. That upsets me. None of my brothers and sisters that have already made it to the top 15, maybe if you're outside the top 15, I don't know where they should be in their pay. But every top 15 guy should not have to have a part-time or full-time or any type of job. They should be able to just do this, concentrate on this day and night, and that's it. You know, so obviously, I'm for the betterment of all, from top to bottom, you know. And it's just the young guys might not understand that, and it takes them a couple of years to understand the system. So with those guys, this might fly over their head. But to the ones that are already, you know, seasoned and stuff and up, they know what I'm talking about.
What did your dad say about the fight?
I'm his son, right? So he loves me. He's like, he knows what's going on behind the scenes. So he's happy, man, that I didn't get hurt. You know, he loves me, and he's very upset. It's a dad love thing. We've immediately cut some things off right away since I got back into town that he wants no longer around me. So he runs a tight ship when I have fight camp. So I didn't have the fight camp now. It wasn't a tight ship, you know, and he's more upset at himself than me in a way that he wasn't running that tight camp even when I didn't have a fight camp, you know. Hmm. I was still training and stuff, but it could be stricter, and he's going to make sure to do this part. I mean, I had like the very first day I got here, he pulled me aside to the kitchen. We had like a good conversation for like 2 hours.
Wow.
Stuff, you know, yeah. And he was a little bit upset. He almost maybe, he hugged me, kissed me, loved me, told me how much he loved me. But at the same time, he wanted to give me a good one, like in the stomach, you know. So it was like, you know, I felt his intensity, man. And he spoke to my son. He knows how to fucking rile me up and shit. So, yeah, you know.
By the way, I saw Abe, your manager, holding a phone in between rounds. Could you hear Mike Brown talking to you via FaceTime?
Gibberish from Mike Brown to him. And at times I would hear, because there was like people talking in my other ear, people talking in the audience. But Abraham was able to say, and I knew it was Mike Brown. I was trying to focus in, but the fatigue being at like a pretty all-time high, it wasn't my how do you say, cognitive skills weren't 100%, you know?
Hmm. What a statement he put out when he, you know, spoke to the media, when he spoke to us about not being out. Did you see what he wrote about, you know, being sad that he couldn't be there for you? It made me emotional reading it, to be honest.
I mean, Mike Brown has, you know, we were teammates first, then we started becoming friends, and then he started coaching me, and he's a huge part of the corner. So it sounds effed up even to say to myself, but it's like, I wasn't meant to win it because Mikey wasn't there, man. Mikey didn't either when I win the belt, you know, even though I'm kind of dissing on myself, you know. But yeah, Mikey has to be there, man. He's a huge factor. A lot of people say I have a large skill set, and a large part of that is because of Mike Brown and Mike Brown's brain. Mm. You know, even in striking wise, which Mikey, that shows you how much he's learned, because he was predominantly, he started off as a wrestler, then he became this wrestler that could submit guys. And then he became this wrestler that had a devastating right hand and mixed in with the submissions and good ground and good ground and pound. So Mike just kept evolving. He's a better striker now than he was when he was competing. You know, he's always training in the gym. He's always training with my coach in camps. He doesn't stop training. You know, so he'll make weight with me, and then he'll go do pads for like an hour with my coach, Paulino Hernandez. And they'll both exchange ideas like, oh, look, I've been thinking of this. What do you think? And Mike Brown will tell him something. He'll be like, wow, that's an interesting way. Let's try it like that. And he's constantly in the laboratory. So I think that's why he stays ahead of so many coaches, because of his work ethic. You know, he really wants to learn everything, you know. And it's a testament why he's constantly coach of the year. I felt he was coach of the year again last year, but obviously I'm biased, you know. But he had the most highest level names in the sport, you know. So obviously I'm gonna go for Mikey.
Okay, last question. So you've told us about the fight week. You've told us what you want next. You want Usman. You want him later on this year. If it's up to you, you're going to talk to the UFC, and hopefully for your sake, you get that done. My last question to you is, you know, that story of you in the drive-through, and you get the call when you're 19 years old to fight Ray in the backyard, and that's kind of where the legend of Gamebred and Jorge Masvidal is born. If I would have told that young man that less than 20 years later, he'd be one of the biggest pay-per-view draws in combat sports, and you would turn into the star that you are today, over a million buys and all that stuff, would he have believed me, or has this now exceeded all your hopes and dreams and expectations?
He would have said, what took him so long? He would have said, what took him so long? It took him a while to get there, you know? I was very dedicated then, made some wrong decisions and stuff, and it's taken a while, obviously, as it shows now. But, yeah, you know, I would have thought it would have came a little sooner in some aspects, you know, skill-wise and things like that. Things that I was able to do, guys that I beat earlier in my career, I would have thought the paychecks would have been a little bigger earlier. But it's all coming back with interest now.
Congrats, Jorge. Well done to you. I know that you will be back. Thank you for the very exciting week and the entertaining fight week, and the event. Everything was just magnified because of you stepping up, and you know, congrats to Kamaru as well. It was a fun fight to watch and cover, and I look forward sometime soon seeing it again. So thanks as always, and thanks for what's that?
It's gonna happen, man. You just made it official on your show. It's gonna take off, you know, and that's it, you know.
And thanks for keeping your word about talking after the fight as well.
You thanking me for that? As far as we go back. And it's funny because you're talking about numbers and stuff. After I lost, I've sent you a couple messages. You have me blocked. I got one loss and now you blocked me.
That Yeah, right. I used to be able to text you direct, but now I have to go through your handlers.
They haven't been getting in. I think you blocked my ass, huh?
Yeah, right. Not
me. This battle is when you lose a fight, man. These guys, I tell you, man.
Thank you, Jorge.
Thank you, my brother.
So great stuff there from Gamebred Jorge Masvidal. Unfortunately for him, he loses on Saturday, but it doesn't really feel like he was much of a loser. Pay-per-view buy rates, according to multiple reports, did tremendously well. You can make a strong case right now that Jorge Masvidal is the second biggest draw in MMA. Conor McGregor, and then him, and then Khabib, and then maybe Nate Diaz. But a lot of people say that Khabib is number two. Well, just compare these buy rates to Khabib versus Poirier. This is way more impressive. Khabib was big because of Conor, and I'm not trying to take anything away from him, but let's be honest, Jorge on his own against a guy who is not a massive draw, Kamaru Usman, he could be in the future, but not right now, seems to be a powerhouse. And I said a couple weeks ago that Jorge would add around 500,000 or so. Maybe I undershot it. Maybe I undersold it. Maybe it was more than that in the end. Jorge Masvidal is a massive star, and I don't feel like his stock has dropped all that much coming out of this fight. So it will be interesting to see if, in fact, the UFC does run it back right away. Do they do the Gilbert Burns fight? Do they listen to me and do Gilbert Burns versus Leon Edwards? Do they do Masvidal versus Diaz 2? There's a lot of options right now for the UFC. Business is good. Despite the fact that they can have fans in attendance, after a show like that, you got to say that business is good. They are certainly capitalizing on the fact that they are running shows and other fight promotions and sports leagues aren't right now. So kudos to them on that. Now, before we get to our next guest, Rose Namajunas.
What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. Well, what about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch at your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autograph apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/DCRC. All lowercase, go to shopify.com/DCRC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/DCRC.
And now, my conversation with the victorious Doug Rose Namajunas. First off, Rose, thank you for the time and congrats on the big win Saturday night.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
So obviously, you know, want to ask about how you're feeling, the black eye, the nose. First off, how is the nose feeling?
That hurts. Turns out my nose is broken, but everything else is good. They were worried about my eye, but everything's fine with my eye. Just my nose hurts.
Do you need surgery?
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't for my deviated septum, I think it would be something that I could live with, but the deviated septum feels really uncomfortable.
Okay. Do you have surgery scheduled for the next few days?
No. So I have an appointment to see somebody on Friday to kind of get all that figured out.
Okay. Is it hard to breathe?
Sometimes, actually right now it's good.
Okay.
Yeah. But sometimes it'll get stopped up.
How's the eye?
The eye feels good. Yeah.
Okay. It's just
it's just colorful.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, it was really big before, but now it's like drained a lot. Like it's healing really fast.
Okay. And the flight back home, was it, you know, with the pressure and everything, did that make it worse?
Yeah, because we didn't really get a chance, because the fights ended. I was in the hospital at 7 o'clock in the morning, which is weird. and then we were there for a while. We had to go, they made us wear all hazmat suits because we were outside of the safe zone or whatever. And it took us a while to get back. And then we had to quarantine in our room at the hotel, and they wouldn't even let us go back to the room we were staying in. So we had to have our teammate or Chico pack up our stuff for us. And then, and we just had to wait until the airport, but we didn't really get that much time in between going to the airport from the flight or from the fight. So it was a lot of pressure in the air for 15 hours too. It's a long time.
Oh my gosh. Would you have liked to have chilled out a day or two to let the swelling go down, or were you happy to go home right away?
I mean, yeah, there's always that would have been nice, but it's always, I'm always ready to come home. I guess if we were in Hawaii or something, I don't know. I feel like if we're a little closer to home, or if there were things that were open, but I just, and yeah, there's things we could have did, but I just I'm so ready to get home after a fight.
Yeah. So I guess some people like to party and celebrate. You guys just like to get back to your home, which I respect.
Yeah,
very much.
That's where the party is, man.
That's right. That's right.
We did have a good time. And when we landed in Vegas, we had a good time because we had to stay at the hotel, and it was just fun. We just, you know, stayed up all night talking about the fight and stuff, and it was good. Plus Vegas is kind of like a second home for me. So I feel really comfortable there. And, I can't sleep after a fight anyways. It usually takes me a day or two. So we just stayed up all night, just laughing, joking.
By the way, speaking of being comfortable, I know, you know, when we talked before the fight, you were saying, you know, initially I didn't love the idea of going overseas and it's so far away. Overall, how was the experience in Abu Dhabi for you?
It was challenging, but it was also very rewarding. There was lots of ups and downs. Like, the flight there was the one thing that I was like, I was crossing my fingers, like, cause we didn't really get told like the situation. Like, we kind of had to just take a leap of faith that everything was going to be safe. Everything's going to be cool. Going there, like the conditions, like we had nothing to base it off of. So, I was crossing my fingers that we were going to get like a decent, like, accommodation for flying that long. But I also know that, like, you know, there's a chance we might be with the luggage just uncomfortable and shit. But no, but yeah, I was super, like, when we got first class seats and it was like that nice, I was like super, like, I felt like royalty and I felt like really excited to go and do some work. And like, it was a huge incentive for me. And then once we got to the hotel, it got a little chaotic. There was a bunch of, like, I think just because it was the first event there, there was a lot of things that were not accommodating, like, you know, because our sleep schedule had to be, we slept during the day and then we'd be up at night because we fight at 6 a.m. So there was just, the food would come at all odd hours. Like, everybody would, like, be knocking on our doors. Like, we had to do, like sometimes, well, the schedule at first was, like, interviews during the day, and it's like, that's when I'm sleeping, you know. So there was things that we had to, like, adjust to. And then I think once like enough people started complaining, it was like it started to change a little bit, because it was just like, this is ridiculous. Like, I think because, yeah, it's just hard to think of all those things before you get there. And then but it got better towards the end of the week.
Being stuck in the room for 48 hours as well, like in Vegas and then in Abu Dhabi, that might be frustrating, I would imagine, too, when you're trying to, like, work out before a fight and everything like that.
It was a little frustrating. However, I hit a really good workout, like, before I left. Like, I ran, like 6 miles, and then we did, like, a little bit of moving around and stuff before flying to Vegas that, like, I was ready for, like, 2 days off. But, okay. Normally, like, I'm kind of used to keeping to myself during fight week anyway, like any chance that I can get. However, I think the fact that they're like, so it wasn't too hard for me to make that adjustment, because I'm like, great, we just sit in our room, we don't have to go nowhere. However, the fact that we couldn't, like, there was just like, there was limited things to do. Then it kind of made it like, hey, I kind of want to go somewhere, you know, like, but, we went for a walk outside, like, one day, like, before the sunrise, and one time during the day, and that was way too hot. So it was like, there's nothing to do anyways.
How are you feeling, like, right before the fight in the locker room? This was your first fight back, fighting the same person who just, you know, beat you and took your belt away and all that. What were the emotions and the nerves like right before the fight?
So this is probably, I only had one other fight where I was, like, the least amount of nervous, like I was this time. And that's when I fought Randa Markos, an Ultimate Fighter. That was like every other fight, I'd just been a mess. But this time I was just so content with and proud of myself for all the improvements that I've made and just the growth that I've made, that like I was just okay with whatever, you know. And I'd say the only time it hit me that I was like, the nerves hit me was Friday, like the weigh-ins. I was just like, I didn't get good sleep because the sleep was, or the weigh-ins was during sleep hours, and it was a mess. But, I was a mess at that time, and then the nerves started getting in. But, and then even fight day, there was a little bit of nerves. But, other than that, I was really calm and just enjoying myself as much as possible. And then, the locker room, once we got to the arena, though, that was the best energy. Like, that was really good. We had, you know, like, I think it was one of the Russian dudes in there before me, and then it was Max Holloway and Kamaru, and it was just a really good vibe in there. I really enjoyed it. And I think a big part of that, like, it reminded me of being at home, because the garage that I turned into a gym, I made that because I really enjoyed training in there for this training camp, because it reminded me of a locker room feel, because it's like kind of a similar size, and it really prepared me for getting in the right state of mind.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
So I think most people thought it was like a tale of two fights. First two rounds clearly went to you. Third round to her. Ultimately, you win via decision. Let's talk about the first two rounds because I was getting flashbacks of that first fight against her. In that first round, again, the striking was beautiful to watch. You seemed on point. You seemed comfortable. You were fluid. You were feeling it out there. Did you like what you were doing? Did you like the way those first two rounds went?
I loved it. Yeah. And I loved it even considering how good Andrade, like how much improvement she had made. Like I still was very happy with the level of, you know, prepared that I was, even given all that. So I was really happy with everything. Going into the third, I knew she was gonna come out a little desperate, and you know, so that was also like anticipating that was definitely like, ooh, okay, here we go, gotta be extra sharp, you know what I mean? And then obviously like I got caught, you know. But overall I was just so proud of myself, you know.
So second straight time that you fight someone back to back, right? Like the same thing happened with Joanna, now her. Do you like that experience of getting familiar with the opponent, or are you ready for a complete change now?
I mean, obviously I think, you know, yeah, it's definitely like rematches are challenging. Like they're super hard because they learn you, you learn them, and there's just a lot of thinking going into it. However, I'm a master at that. Like I'm a genius as far as like my fight IQ and stuff. So, so I think it does work in my favor, but yeah, it is a little more extra challenging, those fights, but obviously I'm successful in all of my rematches. So, so it's something that I was excited about, but at the same time, I know it's going to be a little daunting because I was trying to think of like, what can she come with, in this fight that she, how can she improve? Like what is she going to come differently with? Cause there's always going to be something different, but she always kind of fights the same way, like even throughout like her almost 30 fights, you know, she's very like looks very similar every time. So I couldn't really think of anything other than like maybe she could throw some high kicks. And then for her to come out with that head movement and then come up with that uppercut, like she never threw an uppercut ever. So for her to do that kind of was like, wow, you know what I mean? Like I didn't think of that. So that took me by surprise. But yeah, I mean, I was still so prepared myself that it was just awesome. Yeah, like I was able to deal with that, you know.
Yeah, the head movement was a little different, but it seemed like you were able to find the target more often than not, especially in those first two rounds. That was the first time in a little over 2 years that you got your hand raised. Did you miss that feeling? For those that have never experienced that, like you go through a whole training camp and everything you've been through, and then you finally have that relief. Did you miss that sensation?
Oh yeah, every day, you know. I think it's one of those things where I was forced to take my time, and I didn't really want to, but I knew that was the right decision. Like I wanted to just get right back in there and just, you know, do it again. But it's like, no, like I have to be 100% ready. Like I have to make sure that I make all of the realizations and the mental growth that I need. So,
I noticed that Pat Barry was your chief cornerman this time, and he was in the cage with you in between rounds. Trevor was behind. Why the switch for this particular fight?
Well, I think it was just time, you know, like there's just different phases you go through your career. And I think we still use a lot of the same, like, a lot of Trevor's work came out into that fight, but it's just that we've relied on him for so long heavily that it was just time for, and it was also, I was able to hear, like me and Pat's communication became a lot stronger and better. Because like there are certain things that I was, you know, asking for so long, and he was trying to tell me for so long that we finally started listening to each other and understanding each other. So like, then I was able to actually implement his style and learn from him more. So it was just more of like more taking advantage of the missed time, I guess, over this, you know, however long. Cause I mean, he's actually been the head coach this whole time since I started, you know what I mean? It's just, he, because I couldn't listen to him all the time, or because we maybe have a miscommunications or whatever, like, and I think it was just time also, like me and Trevor was flowing so well, and there's so many valuable things that I learned from him that that's just what was, I guess, the phase.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So is this the plan moving forward, at least for now?
I mean, you know, every day is, you just take one day at a time, you know what I mean? Like, everything was perfect, actually. Like, just like the whole corner, like, it was just the perfect dynamic. Because Trevor and Pat are, they're two opposite styles, you know, but they complement each other so well. And because, like, Trevor, his strength is, you know, his specialty is boxing, you know, for MMA, but like he's so well at that. He's so good at that. And then Pat's like, his specialty is like kickboxing. It's totally different style. It's like, you know, standing your ground. It's like, you know, having not as much movement, you know? And like, so just blending those two things together was perfect.
There was one point in the fight. I don't know if have you watched it back yet?
Yeah,
watching it now.
Actually, yeah, it's on right now.
Really?
Watching.
Wow, that's amazing. How many times have you watched it?
100.
is that common for you guys?
Yep.
Yeah.
But not like this one, no.
Well, no. This one, there's just so many things to like see in it. You know, okay. Things that I didn't like see before. You know, like just new little details that
this
you
fight,
see.
This
one is different too. Like I definitely like. I became a different person coming out of that. That's one of those fights where you're a different person after that. You know,
really?
What I mean?
How so? How have you changed?
Just I ain't no itty bitty rose no more. I ain't no kid no more. You know,
grown. You feel like you've matured.
Yeah.
Because of this fight.
Mm-hmm.
Because you had to dig down deep because of everything you've been through.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think. And it's just like, you know, I think I did have a little bit of like one of the fears that I had going into this fight was like, cause I knew I'm tough as hell. I know that I've pulled through some stuff. I've dealt with a lot of challenges and overcome lots of stuff. But when I've overcame those things, I like, there's a part of me that like was surprised kind of like by me being able to do that. Like, okay, well here it goes. Like here goes nothing. Whereas like me going into that, I was like fully confident. Like I'm about to do this. Like it might run into some walls, might be scary. I know it's gonna be scary, but I'm just gonna run through the wall. And like, so having that confidence going into that, like it just was more validating, I guess.
That is great to hear. I was gonna ask about, there was one point where they they put the mic on your corner, and Pat in particular in the middle of the fight, and he was shouting out just positive stuff. And then Michael Bisping was calling the fight, said, you know, this is what I like to hear from a corner, positive reinforcement, not talking so much, not a lot of coaching, just, you know, backing up the fighter and all that. Were you able to hear that? Because I was wondering about Pat, because he has such a loud voice and it was an empty arena, if maybe now you could hear him more than if you're fighting in front of, like, you know, 18,000 people in a packed arena.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times, like, when it's packed, I can hear, like, specific things, like, certain combinations. And it's crazy how he'll actually call out, like, the finish shot, or, like he'll call it before it comes, like, the opening. It's kind of crazy how he sees it, like, before it happens. But, and so those are, like, just a little bitty things that I hear. But this time, I could hear him a lot more. And, yeah.
Well, people were... very complimentary of your striking. And I came across a boxing promoter, Lou DiBella. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, I saw his tweet, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, man, he's right. He's 100% right. Is that something that you'd love to do? And for those that missed it, basically said that, like, your striking is so good, you can have a great career in pro boxing. It's kind of funny. We just had yesterday the first female main event in Top Rank ESPN history. Yeah. Michaela Mayer was the first.
Yeah, I trained with her. You know, I've trained with her in the past. And you know, I can hang with her. She's a tough, like, she's got a lot of attitude. She's hard to deal with, but yeah, she's, I've trained with her and she's a super athlete and stuff. So yeah, that's something that I've thought about, you know, before, but, I love MMA, dude. I'm so passionate about it. Like, but yeah, I mean, you never know.
Right. So obviously.
Yeah, I love MMA though.
Of course. So you win. Obviously, you have to heal up. But is Zhang Weili next? Are you fighting for the belt next?
Well, I mean, I would think so. No, we haven't really talked about it yet, but I mean, that's definitely the plan.
Is that what you want?
Yeah.
Would you like to fight again this year?
Yeah. I mean, that was kind of the plan going into it. I just had to, you know, get this nose fixed first. We'll see how. I don't know, like, what the recovery time is or whatever, you know.
Did Dana or anyone at the UFC say that's what they want as well?
We haven't talked to anybody about anything.
Yeah, they've been kind of like, let me chill.
Fair enough.
We haven't. There's nothing been talked about. Nothing from nobody.
Yeah, fair enough. No. Fair enough.
Really, like, really, no, not. It hasn't even come up.
I think it's just so, like, there's like.
There's a lot of shit going on right now.
There's a lot of stuff.
Stop to talk about nothing.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are. I mean, shoot, there's fights. You know, there's still fights going on. So
we walked in, we fought, and we walked out. Like, it was
there's
no time. I'm sure after these next two shows are over, maybe conversations will happen, but not like
there's a lot that happens. So
yeah, but I was just curious if that's what you wanted as well, and it sounds like that is what you want, which I think a lot of fans would be very excited about and get behind. It seems like it's the fight that makes the most sense. Just curious. How do you think that fight goes? I know it's very premature now, but have you at least thought of her, watching her style? How do you like the matchup?
A little bit. I mean, yeah, ever since I saw her fight Tisha, I've been kind of like, you know, scouting her out a little bit. And I think it's just going to be, you know, a beautiful display of mixed martial arts. Like, I mean, she's a master, I'm a master. Like, it's going to be really cool. It's going to be, you know, I'm definitely have to have a lot more time to think about it.
I don't know if you saw the clip, but Daniel Cormier and I were talking about you versus her potentially on my show on Monday. I think it's a very competitive fight. He said he thinks that she's on a different level right now. Who's right, me or him?
Well, you know me. I mean, I think at this point, I feel like people would kind of like be like, man, every time Rose is an underdog, she just proved everybody wrong. So, you know what I mean? Like, I would think that would catch on by now, but I guess not.
I saw the
game plan really in the hospital in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, yeah. We came up with
really?
We started game planning for Whaley in the hospital in Abu Dhabi.
But I also know, I mean, I know she's hitting sets right now, too, so I know she don't sleep.
She's been training. She's never taken, like, you know, Whaley's never taken a day off, ever. She's training right now. She watched that fight. She knows, like, everybody, like, we don't know what's next, but that seems like that would be what's next. We started game planning for that fight in the hospital an hour after the fight.
Yeah, so, I mean, like I said, I've been saying for a long time, I would love to fight her. I mean, she's awesome, you know, like, she's She's really, really technical, really strong, just really overall like a master. So yeah, that's something that interests me a lot.
Is there something in particular about her style that impresses you?
Just like her cultural, like you could just see like just the culture that she, you know, grows up in. It shows in her style, like just the discipline, just like she's like a robot, you know what I mean? Like she's like a cyborg, like machine, you know?
Mm.
Yeah.
Have you ever met, she, I don't know if you saw, she paid you a compliment. She feels like you're a true martial artist, she told me. You ever met her before?
I can't remember. I feel like we may have like quickly just met really quickly, but honestly, like, I don't totally remember, but maybe not.
Okay. All right. So that's what we want. Hopefully by the end of the year, if everything goes to plan, that is great news. I think a lot of people will be behind that. I just wanted to ask you before I let you go, after the fight in the post-fight interview, you told John Anik that you're going to donate your fight kit. And all the proceeds are going to go to Susie Friton, who's a longtime UFC employee who is beloved by everyone, who's going through a really hard time right now. So I just wanted to commend you on that. And
thank you.
You know, I think it's an amazing thing that you've done. Do you have any more information that people can find out about this or how they can get behind it?
Yeah, so I'll be making a post really soon here. I just, you know, there's been a lot, you know, I had to just go to like the hospital and all that stuff. So I've been doing a lot of stuff, but I'll be working on that very soon. Just, you know, go to my Instagram and just watch out for the next post that I make. I'll make a video just kind of giving more information on that.
You guys close?
Oh yeah, yeah. We hung out many times before, you know. So she was kind enough for us to like hang out at her house, and you know, I love her dogs. They're so cute. You know, she's a really cool lady, and we've been knowing her for a year, so. I just feel like, and a lot of other fighters, you know, I think we all kind of love Susie because we're all like stressed out during fight week, and she's one of the many, like, one of the few people that like part of the staff that, during fight week is a source of comfort during fight week. You know, just has a good energy. So, yeah.
Well, thank you as always for the time, Rose. Appreciate it very much. I hope you make a speedy recovery. Congratulations on the win. So great to see you back. Great to see you, you know, with a smile and getting your hand raised, and what a great performance it was. So I hope you get that title shot as well. And thank you to Pat and congrats to the entire team for the great performance Saturday.
Thank you.
Great, thoughtful stuff as always from Rose Namajunas. Appreciate the appearance. Or two from Pat Barry as well. Congratulations to the both of them on the bounce back win. And I kind of feel like they have to go the route of Rose versus Zhang Weili. What a great fight that would be. I disagree with Daniel Cormier. I think it would be a very close fight, a very interesting fight, an entertaining fight. And I revealed this on Monday. I love watching when Rose is on point, when she is feeling good. In my opinion, she's top five most exciting fighters in the UFC. Maybe not in the sense that she's going to knock someone out in 5 seconds, but from a technical standpoint, from a just pure fighting standpoint, in my opinion, she's one of the most fun to watch. So a great win, a great victory, a great performance, a great showing from her, and Andrade as well. Andrade looked good in that fight, especially in the third round. As we noted in the interview, head movement was on point through a couple of different things, but in the end, Rose was the better fighter, as I thought she was the first time that they fought back in May of 2019. Unfortunately, that time, Rose got slammed on her head and got knocked out. So we'll see if they do in fact book that Zhang Weili versus Rose Namajunas fight. Appreciate her stopping by as well. All right, now time for everyone's favorite segment of the week. It is time for TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week, and it is brought to you, as always, by Modelo. Modelo Especial. Setting the gold standard for authentic Mexican beer since 1925. Modelo, brewed for those with a fighting spirit.
TST's Minimalist Tip of the Week.
Ariel, for this week's tip, I wish to begin with a quote. The quote is from the great Roman philosopher Seneca, who died around the year 65 AD. So this holds up over time.
Wow, this is big. You actually did like some research.
Oh, this is big. No person has the power to have everything they want, but it is in their power not to want what they don't have, and to cheerfully put to good use what they do have. So, if you don't know, Ariel, listeners, Seneca is a ancient Roman philosopher most known for the philosophy, for practicing the philosophy of Stoicism. He and Marcus Aurelius are the big two practitioners of this philosophy. Now, before you roll, you know, roll your eyes with all this philosophy talk, I want you to hear me out, because this quote sounds very minimalist in nature. Because minimalism is, if you didn't know, it's an offshoot of Stoicism. And at its most basic, what Stoicism is that you choose not to control or rely on external events, instead choosing to control your mind and your behavior. And in the spirit of minimalism, what and who you bring into your lives. And so many famous figures are known for practicing Stoicism, Ariel, like George Washington, Ralph Waldo Emerson, Adam Smith. And those who do practice it suggest it as the key to happiness, to wisdom, and to leading a better life, that Stoicism can do that. And so if you have enjoyed the minimalist principles that we've been laying out for the past several months, then I would recommend taking a deep dive into Stoicism, because I firmly believe many of its principles, which I've researched a little bit about courage, justice, wisdom, and just letting go, which is a core tenet of minimalism, can lead everyone to a better personal, professional, and spiritual life. About letting go, taking the emotions out of so many of the things we do, removing pleasure and pain from everyday situations. And that's a lot about what minimalism is about. So if you want to get to know more about Stoicism, like I do and like I continue to plan on doing, there's a lot of books out there by Seneca, by Marcus Aurelius, these ancient philosophers, and there's a lot of modern interpretations of it as well. I know Ryan Holiday is a big figure in this space today. He has a really cool website called dailystoic.com and that I, you know, get some newsletters from. So minimalism, people think it's trendy. People think it's this new idea, but it's really been around literally since the days of Seneca. So don't come at me for telling me it's a trend and that I'm like some Johnny come lately to this, because this has been around forever.
Two things. Number one, when I think of Stoicism, I don't think of Seneca or Marcus Aurelius or any of these people. I think of like Fyodor Emelianenko, Gegard Mousasi. You know, those are Stoic individuals, you know. So that's the first thing that comes to mind. Number two, love the fact that when we did our virtual show, and by the way, thank you to everyone who joined us last Friday. It was a great turnout. It was a great time. I won the trivia challenge against New York Rick in a very one-sided drubbing, if you will. I love the fact that we were, you know, when we were setting it up before we went live, DC said that you were the minimalist of the team. He was introducing you to someone or bringing it up. I love that, because that's what I do anytime I introduce you to someone. So it seems like we're birds of a feather, if you know what I'm saying, because it really is. You claim that it's not, you know, what you're all about, but meanwhile, it really is what you're all about. And I say you own that. I say that you, yeah, you wear that.
It's a big part of my life. A lot of the principles that minimalists abide by are a lot of the principles that I live my life by. Now, speaking of DC, we have a review here, a 5-star review from Benny. He says, title, love it, 5 stars. You two are great together. I think he's referring to you and DC, not me and you. Mm-hmm. Always the best part of my Mondays when this uploads. We also have another one from G Fresh. Ariel is the greatest, 5 stars. Second to none on MMA for years. Ariel is the person I trust for excellent MMA journalism. The goat emoji.
Wow. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that very much. And I appreciate everyone who continues to download, rate, review, subscribe. We continue to climb the charts worldwide, but I feel like we could do better. And you can actually help us do better by downloading, rating, reviewing, subscribing, all that stuff and more. We got a lot coming your way. Mondays, DC and Helwani. We will react to Saturday night's card, Davidson Figueiredo against Joseph Benavidez. Get you set for Whitaker Till next Monday. And of course, we're back on Wednesdays. It's a nice little thing we got going on here. So we appreciate your support and we appreciate you guys tuning in and downloading and doing all that you do to help us continue to do all of this for you. For now, though, we are out of time. Thank you very much, TST. Thank you very much, Jorge Masvidal. Thank you very much, and congratulations to Rose Namajunas. Thanks to all of you, as always. Enjoy the fights on Saturday night. I'll be back on Monday with Daniel Cormier to talk about them all. For now, though, enjoy the rest of your weekend as well. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.